Coming up on the WSJ Media Mix podcast, branding expert Alan Adamson joins us to decode the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Super Bowl ads.
Welcome to the WSJ Media Mix podcast, bringing you interviews and analysis with people that matter in the fast-changing media business.
Hello and welcome to the WSJ Media Mix podcast. I'm Jack Marshall. I'm joined today by my colleague, WSJ senior editor Michael Shields. Mike, how are you?
I'm all right, Jack. How are you?
I'm doing good. Recovering after the big game?
I'm on a high, man. Let's go. Feel good.
Okay, so on that note, we wanted to talk about some Super Bowl ads, obviously very timely. We're lucky to be joined by Alan Adamson, who is founder of Brand Simple Consulting and is an expert in all things branding and marketing. Alan, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, so Super Bowl ads. I wanted to sort of start. It was a great game. It went obviously to overtime. It went through the fourth quarter. As an advertiser, it seems always like you're taking a bit of a risk by maybe buying an ad in the fourth quarter because you don't know if the game
party's going to be over.
The party might be over. I mean, last night it looked like it may have been over. So I just sort of wanted to ask you about that. I mean, as a brand, does that sort of affect, I don't know, the messaging of your ad, sort of the placement within the game, or is that sort of risky to be placed later in the game versus earlier on, perhaps?
I don't think you ever know. If the game is a blowout, people might pay more attention to the ads, and the party may move away from the game. If the game's very tight, they might talk about the game during the break. So I think it works both ways.
Yeah, I wondered about that last night because all we're talking about, I think all most people are talking about is, oh my God, overtime, I can't believe it, Brady's incredible. Like, does that make the ads actually, like, go into the background a little bit?
I think later in the game it did. I think the game overtook the ads and to some extent. And unless there's a clever tie-in. I think Febreze did a nice tie-in with the halftime break and the bathroom break.
The halftime bathroom break is coming. Is your bathroom ready, America?
But other than that, I don't think that you can... figuring out the placement is, you know, like buying a lottery ticket. You either win or you lose. It's hard to predict that in advance.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the key themes. I mean, it seemed to me that a key one this year was sort of political statements, for want of a better phrase. I mean, for years, brands sort of, I feel like, shied away from doing anything too political in the Super Bowl. I feel like it was different this year.
Yeah, I think it was different because the environment's very charged and polarized. And while former ideas that were innocuous, like togetherness, you know, could be polarizing today. So it was really hard to navigate. And the other pressure is that while everyone is trying to yuck it up, it's hard to be the 10th comedian to get on stage and get the laugh. And so sometimes, you know, zigging and zagging and becoming serious stands out better as in the past with Jeep and even Dove.
I actually don't know this. How much of this is an accident that brands made these ads 6 months ago and didn't know that Trump was going to win and the country was going to be so divided? Or how much of it is like these brands pounced on this in the last few weeks and made these spots deliberately to charge off these issues?
You know, I think mostly it's planned in advance unless you have a very entrepreneurial company like Airbnb that puts something together really quick. And to jump onto an issue. But I think most of them, the Budweiser spot, you know, they didn't shoot that on an iPhone last week.
Welcome to St. Louis, son.
Be here for my friend, please.
Thank you. But next time, this is the beer we drink.
Never had Anheuser.
Dolphus Busch.
So, sort of off that point as well, To what extent do you think those types of approaches, you mentioned the Budweiser one, there are a couple more, 84 Lumber was another. To what extent do you think those are a reflection of the political climate versus just sort of a broader strategy to maybe appeal to younger consumers, for example? I mean, we hear a lot about millennials sort of gravitating towards companies that have sort of a message and a stance on some of these things.
I think, you know, to some extent, there's such pressure to say, hey, look at me and get noticed, that advertisers are looking to, you know, jump onto issues that are going to get them noticed. I think it works if the idea for the core issue is relevant to the brand. As I said, Dove, I think when they tied onto Real Beauty, that was a long-term play tied to where the brand was going. When a brand jumps onto an issue, like, and I love the Budweiser spot, but immigration, you know, it's not core to Budweiser. It's not linked to the beer experience. So I think they jumped onto that issue. They may have gotten noticed, but I'm not sure it's going to do anything maybe potentially damage the brand.
Right. What about the Audi one that was touting equal pay for women? I don't know. Does that have a lot to do with their cars?
Exactly. A lovely story.
Or maybe I'll be able to tell her something different.
Well told, well made, but ultimately, you know, what's the connection between equal pay and cars? Really weak. And I think that's the rub. If you can't make a strong connection between the theme and your brand, you might get noticed, but people remember, oh, you see the lovely ad for the soapbox derby? And I really agree with that. But was that Audi? Was that BMW? I'm not sure who that is. So I think, you know, the trick is to link it to your brand and where you're going long term, not to just use it as a borrowed interest ploy to get noticed.
So we just mentioned the 84 Lumber ad, which I feel like a lot of people were talking about last night. I think it was it a 90-second spot?
It was 90 seconds, and then there was more on the web if you wanted to watch the entire film.
There was more online. What was your take on that? I mean, I'm not sure if a lot of people are necessarily familiar with that brand, so maybe you did the job.
I had never heard of it. I'm in the biz, and I had never heard of that brand. I didn't want to run off and buy some lumber after that. I think there is an example of an unsophisticated advertiser betting, you know, making a political statement and not really caring whether it helps them sell any lumber.
Yeah, and that's taken off in social media, both on both sides of that issue.
Right.
I don't know. Do you think that does anything over time for their brand, or is it, they're talking about hiring tons of people
out of this? I think it gets some notice, and now I've heard of that name, and you know, if they wanted to burn that name into the consciousness of the marketplace, I think they did a good job. Whether it's going to get people to switch from Home Depot to
it's not even a consumer product. I think it's right. Even contractors.
I don't think there was a business driver, and I think that's another good barometer to test here, you know, or litmus test. You know, is there, are these advertisers linking it to the business? Can it go back to that old gray advertising? It ain't creative unless it sells. And which of these ads are going to drive business revenue and move cars off lots or product off the shelf?
So on that note, what did you make of the Mr. Clean ad? Because that seemed to be another one that was getting a lot of buzz online.
Sarah? Clean enough?
To my mind, it was sort of very different to some of the ads that we've just been discussing.
Yeah, I think it was a home run. It focused on the brand. There was no one saw that ad, didn't know it was Mr. Clean. It brought back a classic, iconic character. It was clever. It appealed to, I'm sure it appealed to women. It was a chick flick, if you would. And third, I think it ultimately tied back to the message. I saw the ad. I remembered it. It was for Mr. Clean, and it was about cleaning. And I liked the brand, and it made me smile. So I think ultimately those three steps are still driving effective advertising. Can you break through? Can you get it connected to a brand name? And can you connect it to a message that's relevant to your brand?
Were there any other ads that really popped for you that really were surprises that were either better than you expected or really just something you're remembering?
There were lots of them that were well done, but you know, I scratched my head. The Intel spot with Brady.
Intel 360 Replay makes anything look epic.
Enough. They get it.
You know, it was adorable and the dog. Even if I remembered it was Intel, you know, what was the point? It felt like an ad for the NFL or a Fox television talking about a replay. So there were lots of ads that I remembered the story and it was well made, but I have no connection to what they were, what the brand is or what it was trying to do.
Yeah, that's interesting on the Intel note as well. At least the people I was watching with were sort of most impressed by the halftime drones.
Yeah, the Gaga show, yeah.
Which I think were powered by Intel.
That was almost a native ad, the halftime show, which I thought was probably more memorable for a lot of people than some of the ads.
Yeah, I think part of that is figuring out how to become relevant beyond the, whether it's the afterlife and the social media buzz you get or weaving it into the experience. And I think another interesting play was the different the battle between Google and Amazon Echo. You know, both the products do the same thing. They both, I think had both effective ads. The Amazon using a shorter media play, but was really the buttons worked well.
Alexa, reorder Doritos from Primera.
Okay, look for delivery soon.
And Google went for traditional, you know, advertising, great song, John Denver, Country Road, Take Me Home.
Okay, Google, dim the downstairs lights.
Well done. The product was seen. People, I'm sure, connected it to Google because of the design, and it, either Google or Apple because the visual language is so similar. But I think both brands played to that product line pretty effectively.
Yeah, very different approaches there. And I guess if you're Amazon and you can tease drone delivery, that's
and that was very clever. And I think that little soundbite of that or that little visual, eye candy of the drone delivering it was sticky, as I say. Very sticky.
What about getting back to the political themes? One of the stories that came out after President Trump's surprise victory was that brands were going to try and reconnect with the heartland, and having a little soul searching, like we don't understand the country as much as we thought we did. Did you see any of that reflected in any of the ads you saw last night?
I think Coke made a good call to bring back the 2014 ad, which talked about. Togetherness, almost harkened back to that famous classic Coke ad where they had the kids on the hilltop.
Like to buy a world of Coke.
And so that theme was relevant to the brand and together. And I think it was effective in 2014. It was much more effective last night. That was a soft approach. So I think brands had took a soft approach. I'm not sure that ad that – I don't even remember the brand, classic, with the hair, Trump hair. So I think if you try too hard I think most of them, if it was made you feel good and you didn't lean too hard into the political divide, I think they'll be okay.
So it's interesting. Mike, you wrote a story about 84 Lumber today, sort of explaining some of this. But I think they actually said that it wasn't a political statement. It was.
Yeah, but then they definitely directed their commentary at President Trump about and the wall being having the door and please, they kind of wanted to honor his language about having the wall having a beautiful door in it, which was. It was an interesting dance to try and make that not about pro-immigration and political, but then also. A lot of the imagery seemed very heavy-handed, so I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah, really. And plus, if I'm reading right this morning, they had trouble with the site crash for the people trying to see
first
the
first 10
end.
Minutes.
Oh, really?
And people will try once online, but they won't go back three or four times. So
you get one chance.
They left a lot of money on the table if they were counting on that to pull them over the finish line.
Okay, cool. We're going to stop for a quick break. Stay tuned.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hi, I'm Paul Vigna. If you do not subscribe to the Money Beat podcast, you are going to feel worse than a short seller on the day of a big rally. Go to iTunes and wsj.com/podcasts. You want to sign up for this one.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to the WSJ Media Mix podcast. So just picking up on one theme I thought was kind of interesting last night, I saw some data that suggested the ad that was getting the most buzz on social media was actually for a Netflix show, Stranger Things.
Look on my ego.
You like on my ego.
We're talking about sort of advertising, and obviously this is a huge TV moment during the Super Bowl. But it was just interesting to me that it was sort of quote-unquote content that was supposedly resonating with people more than some of the ads. So I just wonder, if you're an advertiser sort of looking at that, how do you think about it?
Well, it's everyone sees everything, and everything is connected. So I think it was smart of both Hulu to promote one of the programs and Netflix, and obviously the big movie studios did their best because they got away. And those are one shots. Either the movie's going to be a hit and connect, or it's not. But they tend to stand out because they feel more authentic. While other advertisers are trying to recreate a movie feel, when you're advertising content, it has more authenticity and credibility often.
Not to mention content that you watch without ads.
Right, exactly.
It's a little bit ironic in that.
Although if the game is really bad, I think most people tend to focus more on the ads anyway.
Right. What do you make that one? I don't believe that one was out on social media before yesterday. But so many advertisers do that now, and it's almost like a big ramp up before the Super Bowl to tease their ads or promote them. And do you think we're ever going to go back to a time when everything's a surprise on Super Bowl Sunday, or is it always going to be a prolonged social media strategy for these guys?
I think you'll have to there are two routes. You either make it a surprise and manage that opening shot, and then you win on social media later, or you prime the pump and build up to it. You know, I don't think there's a right or wrong answer. You know, I think, you know, partly is having content that gets shared. I think the Melissa McCarthy thing, you know, obviously is going to, you know, it was a Saturday Night Live,
right.
And it was nice that she gave that a boost by appearing on Saturday
yes.
Night Live. So she, you know, she's hot right now. I think on trend. Whether, you know, people are going to run off to their local Kia dealers and say, you know, give me one of Melissa's cars, I'm not so sure.
So you mentioned Google there as well. It's interesting, and to Mike's point, for the past few years, Google and others have been sort of encouraging advertisers to upload their ads ahead of the game and to generate buzz. Google sort of notably didn't do that, as far as I'm aware. So, you know, they sort of saved it to...
I think theirs was a softer approach. I think if they had released that earlier, it would have been fallen flat in its face. You know, you needed to be forced to sit through a softer, quieter voice versus a big yuck or a big dramatic opening.
So it just depends on the creative.
I think sometimes you have to, you know, marry the creative with the, of course, it's always been the case, marry the creative with the media strategy.
What did you make of the several of the big telecom brands were active last night?
You know, I think they were all throwing mud at each other, and you know, I think at the end no one remembers who. There was a T-Mobile spot that looked like a Verizon spot for the whole time, or were on the phone with customer service. I think, you know, Justin Bieber.
Hello, I'm Justin Bieber, celebration expert. Unlimited moves. This guy's got the shimmity sham sham shimmity shake right there.
You know, it was nice to see him cleaned up and looking like an adult and reasonably polished and James Bondish. But ultimately, I'm not sure people ran out and said, well, you know, I want to see more of Justin's move. I'm not sure they got any viral traction from his, you know, dancing on. But other than that one spot, the rest of them, and the most ridiculous was the father driving the car off the cliff to get out of his contract. You know,
was that the Sprint
ad? I think it was. It could have been T-Mobile. You know, it could have been anybody. I think most people remember the car going off the ditch and not even sure why they were watching that.
So that's really interesting because, you know, in the telecom wars, that's sort of been a real trend recently, is calling each other out by name and attacking each other by name. But Do you think that maybe doing so just sort of dilutes the whole message anyway?
The conventional wisdom, and I think it holds, is that if you're spending all your time, you know, taking down the other guy, people will remember the negativity, but you know, it doesn't build your brand. It may give you a short-term win, just like the Pepsi challenge way back when. You know, took a little bit of Coke's business in the short term when they did those challenges, but in the longer run, in the marathon, you know, Coke's focus on its brand and being positive paid out more than Pepsi going after them with the challenge.
What about you consult brands outside of the Super Bowl? What are you telling them right now when you know, that's a very unique event where we're all watching the commercials as part of the experience, it's live, but you have a generation of consumers that are where interruptive advertising is really unwanted or avoided, you know, between environments like Netflix, ad blocking, Spotify, et cetera. What are you telling brands like that, like these days, to try and connect with that audience?
Well, you have to just constantly ask yourself, are you relevant? How are you relevant? Is this message relevant to who's ever watching it when it is? And, you know, part of relevancy could be, is it entertaining and funny? But then you have to make sure you don't get sucked into, it's a really funny ad, but it's, you know, what's it doing for my brand? And I think there were some examples last night, you know, Mr. Clean and others that manage that tricky balance really well, making content that was engaging, fun to watch, shareable. Seeing Mr. Clean do a dance in the shower, but ultimately driving their business versus brands like Bia the beverage. I'm not even sure what that is. And having a guy talking to horses. I mean, they were so enamored with trying to get noticed that even if you remembered the brand, you know, most people don't know what it is, and I don't think it moved their game down the field, as you might say.
I do think that's interesting. Again, we've talked about this already, but the Mr. Clean spot to me was sort of an old-fashioned TV ad, but also like an old-fashioned Super Bowl spot. You know, mm-hmm. It's the mascot coming to life, and so for all of these tactics, sort of, you know, latching on to political themes and everything else, do you think there's an argument to say that, you know, the old sort of tricks are the best, or does it just depend on the brand?
I just think you have to keep your eye on the ball and say, look, what are we trying to accomplish? And try to, you know, not only get noticed, but, you know, try to bring it on home. And if you can't, just accept the fact that we're just going to be there to make people maybe remember us and smile. And if they possibly remember us and smile, that's a win. But most serious marketers, I think, need to look at what is this going to do to my business? What's the ROI on this? And are we filling beds? Are we getting people to sign up for cell phone contracts or not?
It's, you know, it's the morning after. Do you have a clear winner and loser in your mind, or a handful of the best and worst yet?
You know, I think the winners were the one. I think Melissa McCarthy's ad for Kia won.
Hey, Melissa, now the rhinos need saving.
Rhinos!
It's hard to be an eco-warrior, but it's easy to drive like one. Introducing the most fuel-efficient crossover, the Kia Niro.
Oh, come on! I need a hero!
Funny and enjoyable that, you know, its numbers will be so big, both socially and sharing that I think even if only, you know, 30% of the people know it was Kia and less know it was which car, I think the numbers are so big that it will do well. I think the Budweiser spot, despite what I just said, I think because while everyone is trying to yuck it up, the 10th comedian, as I said, is not that funny. And so by taking a serious tone, and it was really well made, I think that, you know, they got noticed versus, you know, often Budweiser is a series of puppies and Clydesdales and, you know, very sweet, but not sticky. I think that was a sticky idea that, you know, it will do well socially. But I thought it was an average year. I didn't think there was that much, you know, there were a lot of very nice smiling ads, but there wasn't. I don't think they're going to do great at the water cooler today, most of the marketers.
Do you think just broadly sort of the Super Bowl ad opportunity is, I don't know what the right word is, diminishing? I mean, there are an increasing array of sort of digital platforms. I know a lot of marketers were running ads on Snapchat, for example, alongside NFL content. I don't know. Is the Super Bowl not what it used to be?
I think it's still the only game in town in terms of getting that many eyeballs that much in real time.
Just that reach.
It's just the world's getting so fragmented that sports events are still, if you want to talk to a lot of people, it's still a game you have to play.
All right. Well, we'll wrap it up there. Alan, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Join us next time on the Media Mix podcast.
For more podcasts, check us out at wsj.com/podcasts. Become a subscriber on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and now look for us on the Google Play Music app on Android devices.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.